Hello, hello, and welcome. All right, this is going to be, I think, my first solo cast, and I am going to read an excerpt from the Constitution of the United States of America and the selected writings of the Founding Fathers. In this case, it's Samuel Adams, and he wrote something that is titled The Rights of Colonists as Men. And my interpretation of that is not just men. He's talking about people, the rights of the colonists as human beings. So I will read it exactly as it is, and then I may stop and break something down, or I may read it all the way through. Don't know yet. We'll see how it goes. But here goes. The Rights of Colonists as Men, Samuel Adams. From the Committee of Correspondence to the Boston Town Meeting on November 20th, 1772. Among the natural rights of the colonists are these. First, a right to life. Second, to liberty. Thirdly, to property. Together with the right to support and defend them in the best manner they can. These are evident branches of, rather than deductions from, the duty of self-preservation, commonly called the first law of nature. All men have a right to remain in a state of nature as long as they please, and in case of intolerable oppression, civil or religious, to leave the society they belong to and enter into another. When men enter into society, it is by voluntary consent, and they have a right to demand and insist upon the performance of such conditions and previous limitations as form an equitable original compact. Every natural right not expressly given up or from the nature of a social compact necessarily ceded remains. So that's one basically saying all the laws of nature still apply unless you actively give them up. All right, back to it. All positive and civil laws should conform as far as possible to the law of natural reason and equity, as neither reason requires nor religion permits the contrary. Every man living in or out of a state of civil society has a right peaceably and quietly to worship God according to the dictates of his conscience. Just and true liberty, equal and impartial liberty, in matters of spiritual and temporal is a thing that all men are clearly entitled to by the eternal and immutable laws of God and nature, as well as by these laws of nations and all well-grounded and municipal laws, which must have their foundation in the former. I'm going to break it down real quick. I'll just comment on it. I really like that part where he says, as well as by the laws of nations, and specifically this, all well-grounded and municipal laws. So basically, your local laws that are well-grounded, so rooted in common sense. So if you have something that's not rooted in common sense on a local level, it has to have that foundation. Otherwise, based on the law of nature, you don't have to follow it. That's what I take away from this, and I really appreciate that because there's there's a lot of that going on right now. All right, I'll continue. In regard to religion, mutual toleration in the different professions thereof is what all good and candid minds in all ages have ever practiced, and both by precept and by example inculcated on mankind. It is now generally agreed among Christians that the spirit of toleration, in the fullest extent consistent with the being of civil society, is the chief characteristical mark of the true church. Tolerance is what they're saying. Insomuch that Mr. Locke has asserted and proved beyond the possibility of contradiction on any solid ground, that such toleration ought to be extended to all whose doctrines are not subversive of society. The only sects in which he thinks ought to be, and which by all wise laws are, excluded from such toleration, are those who teach doctrines subversive of the civil government under which they live. I'm going to take a second there and say, basically, you can practice whatever religion you want unless it's subversive to the civil government under which you live. However, when that civil government starts to legislate things that don't make sense based on the laws of nature, like the previous one I offered my opinion on, then it doesn't have to apply. So if the government is telling you, hey, you can't do this, or you're trying to tell us, you know, this is the conflict of we the people, because we want to say, hey, we're paying taxes, right? You know, whether taxes are of the Constitution or not is a separate issue. But if we're going to pay taxes, then we want to decide what happens with the money that we are supposedly required to give to the government, instead of just saying, okay, we're going to give you this percentage and now you can do whatever you want with it. Because if they're starting to use that money that they're requiring us to give, even though we the people are the government, our elected officials are not doing what we say. So that sounds like a time or a point where we need to be subversive toward the government. All right, after going back and listening to this, I think what it's trying to say is that you cannot establish a religion that is structured around overthrowing the government. However, we need to be able to overthrow our own government if it is not serving we the people like we established in the beginning. So apart from any religious belief or religious structure, we the people actually have a duty. During the formulation of this country, it's our responsibility to keep our own government in check. Otherwise, they're going to screw us. They're going to take advantage of us, which they've been doing for a long time now. So it's our responsibility, really, to keep them in check. Now, what's the best way to do that? I don't exactly know. I've got some ideas, but everybody's got some ideas. So I'll hold off on those ideas for now, but it's up to us to keep our government in check. Otherwise, we're going to screw ourselves based on our own complacency, which is what's happening. So how do we keep the government in check? It would be nice if we could just decide, hey, let's remove these officials and put new officials in there. Put new officials in there that have some, an understanding of why the previous officials were removed and what the consequences are. We need to have some really strong consequences for the abuses of power, which I don't see that happening right now. And that needs to change. There needs to be some serious accountability from the people to the government. Otherwise, we're not going to have a nation for much longer. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe I didn't break it down in a way that makes sense. All right, moving on. The Roman Catholics, or Papists, are excluded by reason of such doctrines as these, that princes excommunicated may be deposed, and those that they call heretics may be destroyed without mercy, besides their recognizing the Pope in so absolute a manner in subversion of government by introducing as far as possible into the states under whose protection they enjoy life, liberty, and property, that solecism in politics, imperium in imperio, leading directly to the worst anarchy and confusion, civil discord, war, and bloodshed. Well, that was a mouthful. I don't know exactly what all that means. I'd have to go line by line to break that down, but I'm going to keep going. The natural liberty of man by entering into society is abridged or restrained so far only as is necessary for the great end of society, the best good of the whole. So if you come into society, strike that. I'm going to keep reading. In the state of nature, every man is, under God, judge and sole judge of his own rights and of the injuries done to him. By entering into society, he agrees to an arbiter or indifferent judge between him and his neighbors, but he no more renounces his original right, thereby taking a cause out of the ordinary course of law and leaving the decision to referees or indifferent arbitrators. In the last case, he must pay the referee for time and trouble. He should also be willing to pay his just quota for the support of the government, the law, and the Constitution, the end of which is to furnish indifferent and impartial judges in all cases that may happen, whether civil, ecclesiastical, marine, or military. The natural liberty of man is to be free from any superior power on earth, and not to be under the will or legislative authority of man, but only to have the law of nature for his rule. In the state of nature, men may, as the patriarchs did, employ hired servants for the defense of their lives, liberties, and property, and they shall pay them reasonable wages. Government was instituted for the purpose of the common defense, and those who hold the reins of government have an equitable natural right to an honorable support from the same principle, that the laborer is worthy of his hire. But then the same community which they serve ought to be the assessors of their pay. Governors have a right to seek and take whatever they please. By this, instead of being content with the station that is assigned to them, that of honorable servants of society, they would soon become absolute masters, despots, and tyrants. Hence, as a private man has a right to say what wages he will give in his private affairs, so has a community to determine what they will give and grant of their substance for the administration of public affairs. All right, I'll do a little breakdown on that one. So what Sam Adams is saying in that is that we get to decide, we the people get to decide how much our public officials or public servants or those who hold public offices, governmental offices, city council, all that stuff. We the people get to decide what they get paid, how much they get paid. And apparently, you know, the Pelosi's are a great example of thinking, oh, they don't freaking get paid enough, so they're going to go ahead and do some insider trading or get some tips on how to make money. Or there's a lot of stuff like that going on, what we would call corruption for those of us who aren't extraordinarily well-versed in the inner workings of what's happening on the political stage. So it's up to us. We get to say, oh, well, I'm going to hire you to do this job. This is how much I'm going to pay you. And if you still want the job, you can still run for it. Basically, we all have a say. Sounds great, doesn't it? Doesn't seem like that's the way it works, but we're not doing our duty as citizens. And in both cases, more are ready to offer their services at the proposed and stipulated price than are able, willing to perform their duty. In short, it is the greatest absurdity to suppose it in the power of one or of any number of men at the entering into society to renounce their essential natural rights or the means of preserving those rights when the grand end of civil government from the very nature of its institution, is for the support, protection, and defense of those very rights, the principle of which, as is before observed, are life, liberty, and property. So this makes me think of the World Economic Forum. They say, you will own nothing and be happy. So that goes against, first of all, the law of nature. It goes against Western society. Not that we couldn't, you know, tweak a few things to make our relationship with material belongings better and healthier for ourselves, but that is a direct violation of the law of nature. If men, through fear, fraud, or mistake, should in terms renounce or give up any essential natural right, the eternal law of reason and the grand end of society would be absolutely vacated in such renunciation. The right of the freedom being the gift of God Almighty, it is not in the power of man to alienate this gift and voluntarily become a slave. The next section has a subtitle, and it says, As Christians. So, as Christians, these may be best understood by reading and carefully studying the institutes of the great lawgiver and the head of the Christian church, which are to be found clearly written and promulgated in the New Testament. By an act of the British Parliament, commonly called the Toleration Act, every subject in England, except the Papists, were restored to and reestablished in his natural right to worship God according to the dictates of his own conscience. And by the character of this province, it is granted, ordained, and established, that is, declared as an original right, that there shall be liberty of conscience allowed in the worship of God to all Christians, except Papists, inhabiting or which shall inhabit or be resident within such province or territory. Magna Charta itself is in substance but a constrained declaration or proclamation and promulgation in the name of kings, lords, and commons, of the sense of the latter had their original, inherent, indefeasible natural rights, as also those of free citizens equally perdurable with the other. That great author, that great jurist, and even that great court writer, Mr. Justice Blackstone, holds that this recognition was justly obtained of King John, sword in hand. And peradventure it must be one day, sword in hand, again rescued and preserved from total destruction and oblivion. That time is now, people. The Founding Fathers predicted it. They said this would happen. They said there will be a time when you need to take your sword in hand and take your rights back again, because tyrants will rise up. Oppression will rise up. I haven't seen it rise up any more than it is right now. The issue we face is that there's not one person we can go to. It's not the president that's oppressing us. There's not one specific person like the King of England that we can go to with a sword and say, hey, let my people go. That doesn't exist right now. So we need to be smarter. We need to figure out a way to stop these lawmakers from making laws and approving laws that ruin us. The next section is titled As Subjects. A commonwealth or state is a body politic or civil society of men united together to promote their mutual safety and prosperity by means of that union. The absolute right of Englishmen and all free men in or out of civil society are principally personal security, personal liberty, and private property. So it's saying the right of all free people in society or out of society are personal security, personal liberty, and private property. All persons born in the British American colonies are by the laws of God and nature and by the common law of England, exclusive of all charters from the Crown, well entitled and by acts of the British Parliament are declared to be entitled to the all-natural, essential, inherent, and inseparable rights, liberties, and privileges of subjects born in Great Britain or within the realm. Interesting. Among these rights are the following, which no man or body of men, consistently with their own rights as men and citizens or members of society, can for themselves give up or take away from others. First, the first fundamental positive law of all commonwealths or states is the establishing the legislative power. So the ability to create laws. As the first fundamental natural law, also, which is to govern even the legislative power itself, is the preservation of the society. So the first law they're saying is to be able to create laws and to regulate those laws and lawmakers. Our lawmakers right now are not being regulated by us people.
So how would they have handled this back in the day, back in the Wild West, or back in colonial times? They would have gone by force in a group.
Say, hey, you're not representing us. You're not doing your job. You're not serving the people. That is a problem. You are compromising everything that we have worked for. Secondly, the legislative has no right to absolute arbitrary power over the lives and fortunes of the people, nor can mortals assume a prerogative not only too high for men, but for angels, and therefore reserved for the God alone. The legislative cannot justly assume to itself a power to rule by extempore arbitrary decrees. Basically, what they're saying is they cannot legislate themselves more power. But that's exactly what they're doing.
Most of the time, they claim that it's for our safety that they're doing this. Examples would be the Patriot Act after September 11th, 2001, it was introduced. Another example would be the National Defense Authorization Act, which was signed into law by President Obama, I believe, on New Year's Eve one year in, maybe it was 08. I don't recall which year. But the things like that give massive amounts of power to the government and to the military against its own people. So yes, it does happen. It has happened. It is happening. And all they have to do, like literally, one of the things in the National Defense Authorization Act is they can come and seize your vehicle or any sort of resources that you have if they need to. I know that the National Defense Authorization Act has been like renewed more than one time. I don't know if it's been changed, but in the original one during Obama's presidency, that was one of the things there. So they're basically creating a law that says, hey, yeah, we can take all your stuff if we want it or need it. So they do legislate themselves more power against us, the people, the ones that supposedly put them there. We've become too complacent, too focused elsewhere.
But it is bound to see that justice is dispensed, and that the rights of the subjects be decided by promulgated standing and known laws and authorized independent judges, that is, independent as far as possible of prince and people. So what, like a sheriff? Not sure I fully understand that, but maybe a sheriff or something like that. There should be one rule of justice for rich and for poor, for the favorite at court and the countryman at the plow. Thirdly, the supreme power cannot justly take from any man any part of his property without his consent in person or by his representative. These are some of the first principles of natural law and justice, and the great barriers of all free states, and of the British Constitution in particular. It is utterly irreconcilable to these principles and to any other fundamental maxims of the common law, common sense, and reason that a British House of Commons should have a right at pleasure to give and grant the property of the colonists. That the colonists are well entitled to all essential rights, liberties, and privileges of men and freemen born in Britain is manifest not only from the colony charters in general, but the acts of the British Parliament. The statute of the 13th GO 2 C7 naturalizes every foreigner after 7 years' residence. The words of the Massachusetts Charter
are these. And further, our will and pleasure is, and we do hereby for us, our heirs and successors, grant, establish, and ordain that all and every of the subjects of us, our heirs and successors, which shall go to and inhabit within our said province or territory, so basically all of our offspring that live in our area, and every of their children, which shall happen to be born there or on the seas in going thither or returning from thence, shall have and enjoy all liberties and immunities of free and natural subjects within any of the dominions of us, our heirs and successors, to all intents, constructions, and purposes whatsoever. So basically they're saying anything that is freedom and is our right now also applies to our children and anybody that is a part of this territory, whether they travel outside of it or not. That's what I get from that. As if they and every one of them were born within this, our realm of England. Our realm of England, it says. Now, what liberty can there be where property is taken away without consent? How is there freedom if they can just come take your stuff without you saying otherwise? Can it be said with any color of truth and justice that this continent of 3,000 miles in length and of a breadth as yet unexplored, in which, however, it is supposed that there are 5 million people, had the least voice, vote, or influence in the British Parliament? Have they already any more weight or power to return a single member to that House of Commons who have not inadvertently but deliberately assumed a power to dispose of their lives, liberties, and properties than to choose an emperor of China? Had the colonists a right to return members to the British Parliament, it would only be hurtful, as from their local situation and circumstance, it is impossible that they should ever be truly and properly represented there. The inhabitants of this country, in all probability, in a few years, will be more numerous than those of Great Britain and Ireland together. Yet, it is absurdly expected by the promoters of the present measure that these, with all their posterity to all generations, should be easy while their property shall be disposed of by a House of Commons at 3,000 miles distant from them. So basically they're saying you shouldn't be able to control somebody that's that far away. That's why we cross the ocean. And who cannot be supposed to have the least care or concern for their real interest. But it must be, in effect, bribed against, as every burden they lay on the colonists is so much saved or gained to themselves. Hitherto, many of the colonists have been free from quit rents, but if the breath of a British House of Commons can originate an act for taking away all our money, our lands will go next, or be subject to rack rents from haughty and relentless landlords, who will ride at ease while we are trodden in the dirt. The colonists have been branded with the odious names of traitors and rebels, only for complaining of their grievances. How long such treatment will or ought to be borne is submitted. Well, that's the whole thing. That's it. That's dense. There's a lot of big words in there that we don't really use often anymore. But what do I get from that? Don't tread on me. That's really what I get from that. And it doesn't matter if you're in a court or wearing a robe or if you're whatever office you hold far away from here, that, you know, the law of the land, the local law of the local land is really what matters and really what applies. And natural law applies too. And it's saying that if you want to be a part of our community, part of our society, you want to participate in this locally, then you need to adhere to the laws until the point where the government tries to become tyrannical, to take too much control. And then you can oppose the government. Remove the officials those who we voted in. But currently we don't have good legislation for removing these officials unless they commit some sort of crime. Problem is, the laws that have been written... I wish I was more educated in this. The laws that have been written are written in such a way that allow things to be done legally that should not be allowed to be done. Basically, there's a lot of loopholes. I don't even have a good example. But that is what's happening right now. So that was Sam Adams in 1772 in Boston. And I really love that one. I'm going to go back through and do some main takeaways, some things that I think are really, really potent and that we should all adhere to. Most of the first page. Among the natural rights of us are these: life, liberty, property, together with the right to support and defend them in the best manner that we can. These are evident branches of self-preservation, which is the first law of nature. All men have a right to remain in a state of nature as long as you want. In the case of intolerable oppression, so whether it's civil or religious, you can leave the society you belong to and go to another. When men enter into a society, it's voluntary, and you have the right to insist on the performance and conditions and previous limitations in that society. Every natural right that is not voluntarily given up remains. And I'm not talking about the rights like in the Bill of Rights. I'm talking about like natural law. Someone attacks you, you get to defend yourself no matter what. All laws, all positive and civil laws, should conform to natural reason. Every man living in or out of a state of civil society has the right, peaceably and quietly, to worship God according to his own conscience. So it's talking about a personal relationship with God. You have a personal relationship with God, and you can worship God however you please, as long as it's not stepping upon others' ability to do so. Just and true liberty, equal and impartial liberty, as well as the laws of nations, must have their foundation in well-grounded common sense and natural reason. The natural liberty of man by entering into society is restrained only as it is necessary for the good of the whole. The natural freedom of man is to be free from any superior power on earth and not to be under the will or the law authority of man, but only to have the law of nature for his rule. Now, when we enter into society, that changes a little bit because we're agreeing, hey, we're going to abide by these things and those things. But there needs to be a line somewhere, because when we start to legislate ourselves into a corner, then we're kind of screwing ourselves and turning our back on the laws of nature. One thing I like that it says is the right of freedom being the gift of God Almighty. It is not in the power of man to alienate this gift. So you're free. Whether you have something that says you are or not. You don't need a piece of paper. You don't need the Constitution. You don't even need the Bill of Rights or the amendments in order to be free based on natural law. However, not everybody understands or abides by that, which is why these men, the founding fathers, decided to write this agreement based on natural law, saying, hey, these are the tenets of what it is to exist and exist in the community. So let's do it. And they did it. And we're upholding it one step at a time. So know your freedom. Know what it is. Know what its limits are or aren't based on your understanding of it and what other people would do to prevent your freedom from remaining. And then fight back. Don't let anybody take your freedom. Nobody. Not a religion, not a society, not an individual, not a cancellation, nothing. You are free.